This is the KSEL Field and Farm Report. As we do on a weekly basis, we check in with Roseville County Agent Patrick Kircher and talk about, all the agricultural issues of the day. Good day, sir.
Hello, sir.
Or at least just a few of them. Anyway, it'd be a little crazy to try to talk about all of them. Let's get right into it. I'd kind of tasked you this week. This is all the topics that we've had this week, really, because of things have been a little bit crazy around here as we're now into December. I said, what do you want to talk about today, Patrick? There's a few of them out there that are pretty big ones. As a matter of fact, let's start with this one. Senator Charles Grassley from Iowa. If you're talking about agriculture, you're talking about ag policy. That's one of the first guys that comes to mind. He's one of the few already talking about the 2018 Farm Bill. Some of the impacts that might be out there, especially for those large operations in agriculture.
Yeah, I was looking for ideas and hit on that one. And he's pretty adamant that he's wanting to cap out. I mean, they've been working on capping out commodity payments for some time. And, you know, and we all know that the 14 bill was a very drastic shift from where they had been previously. But he really sounds like at least in the preliminary language he's throwing around, that he is really going to slam on that higher end payment again. And the other one that I thought intriguing in that is they're even wanting to crank down on that actively engaged in the operation to get payment. You know, what comes to mind is, you know, the family farm still owned by the siblings. One sibling doesn't live on the farm but still gets part of the farm payments.
Right.
I'm questioning how, at least the verbiage he's throwing around, I'm wondering if that, you know, sibling that's not actively on the farm engaged is going to be able to still draw payment on that. So I don't know. It just makes a body wonder where we're headed in this new bill.
Yeah. Well, and that's the funny thing, you bring that up, because I'm pretty certain that by about January or February, that's going to be really the primary focus of everybody involved in agriculture, whether or not that they can really get a farm bill done in 2018, or if they have to kind of move that one, shift it back a year, as we've started to see kind of be the trend here in years lately.
Oh, sure.
Let's see. The other one is obviously when you start talking about some major buyouts, the very big ones that have to kind of pass muster with public regulation. You kind of got to look at this one. That is Bayer buying out Monsanto. That was huge.
Oh, it's gigantic. I mean, it was, you know, there used to be a lot of companies, and then there were fewer companies, and now we're looking at even fewer companies. I mean, we're, you know, most of the discussion, they're talking about the big three now. You know, these two are just monumentally behemoths. The real concern and the blowback that folks are talking is that big of a company having that much control over that big a piece of agriculture. You know, it really could stymie people's ability to do anything, you know, because it could reach a point where you don't play with us, we don't play with you, and you're left out in the cold.
Yeah.
So it's there's definitely folks concerned, but from what the article is reading, you know, there's no regulatory group in D.C. finding issue with that merger going forward.
You know, there's an analogy I could use, and that was back when you had Ma Bell, AT&T. That was it. When they came through, kind of decided to go ahead and break that up, and because it wasn't indeed a monopoly, everybody was happy about that for a moment until they got their first phone bill, and then suddenly everything was about twice as high. Well, it was because they couldn't operate as efficiently as a monopoly can, so we'll see if that's going to be a good deal for ag producers or not.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the last one, let's talk BRD, and really when you start talking about it in the cattle industry, this one's a big one.
Yeah, bovine respiratory disease is a major player, and I just found this article and thought it was kind of interesting. There's some researchers out of California that are looking to see if they can find a genetic link in bulls that would sire calves that are resistant to BRD. You know, the researcher was talking about that, you know, the rate of BRD hasn't changed in 30 years in the cattle feeding industry, or in the cattle industry as a whole. You know, and you look at the advancements and everything else, you know, technology and research that has happened, and they still haven't been able to shift that disease and how it affects the business. And so they got to looking to see, could we find a set of bulls, find genetic markers in bulls, where we find bulls that pass on a predisposition to either be immune to it or have a greater resistance to it, so they don't get as sick, they don't have as many problems. And looking at that aspect, and you know, genetic technology is so huge in the cattle industry. I mean, there's so many things you can track, there's so many things that you can look at. And I thought it was just an interesting twist that if you could take and find a marker in a bull and sell that bull as a marker that, you know, he will pass on that trait, even though it's a lowly heritable trait, it's still there.
Right.
And so if you could pass that on and essentially genetically breed a set of cattle that are, you know, more predisposed not to get ill, not to have health problems, I just see that as a win-win for everybody. You know, less antibiotic use, the real hot button deal there, you know, greater management ease. I mean, I guess it's just a pretty novel concept that somebody was looking at to go that route to see, could we help? Sure. Could we make a difference?
Well, it just sounds like, you know, when they started talking about real initial stages of genome mapping years ago, that we were starting to maybe reap those benefits now.
Exactly.
All right, that's it for our segment today with Roosevelt County Agent Patrick Kircher. You can always get hold of Patrick and his fine crew at the Extension office at 356-4417. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
This is the KSEL Field and Farm Report. As we do on Friday mornings, we have our weekly segment with Roosevelt County Agent Patrick Kircher. Good day, sir.
Hello, sir.
Good to get you in this time around. Last time around, we'd recorded, I think, on a Wednesday. So it was before the High Plains Crop and Livestock Symposium that you put on, the first of its kind. Kind of the, I suppose you could say, the rightful heir to the New Mexico Ag Expo, I suppose.
Yes.
But, we haven't had you on since then. Tell us a little bit about how that event, what were your thoughts on it?
I was really, really pleased. It, you know, it was our next segue into continuing to provide educational opportunity in the late winter. We had just a wonderful turnout, great sponsor support, and really felt like it was a very productive day. Had several folks catch me, both attendees, speakers, really felt it was a good direction. We used a survey system this year to get some feedback from attendees so we can look at that and tweak and improve. But I really think it's something that's going to allow us to move forward.
Now, this being just a one-day event of its kind, you'd kind of had it split out. You're either on the crop side or you're on the livestock side of all this information. We know there are some folks around here that are kind of involved in both. Was that one of the criticisms?
Yes, it was. I had several guys catch me that, you know, hey, I really wanted to sit in on this one and that one. You know, couldn't do both. So, you know, maybe something as we look forward that we gear back and don't take on quite as much at one take. Maybe we'll look at, you know, going agronomy one year and livestock the next or something. We'll see. But, yeah, no, that was a major complaint was the that I shouldn't say a major, but one that was brought up that right. Folks wanted to be able to attend both sets, but was really tickled with how it turned out and how we had participation both ways. And boy, the sponsors that came forward to help us, it was huge. You know, I'd put the gratuitous plug out there for Creightonstown and Country and Purina Feeds, sponsored the meal, had a great meal. So like I say, it was a darn good day.
All right. Well, we'll have to look forward and see what you can put together for the symposium coming up for the second annual variety next year. All right. On to a few other things. And this one, well, we've been talking about, I think, probably about 2 or 3 months now. And that has to do electronic logging of, and it's been coming up in Trent Luce's segment on the same show and everything else for a few months now. Because the laws, the rules are getting ready to change. I guess they already have, actually. They were supposed to go into effect, I think, in January. Got kicked back a little bit further down the road. But there's a problem when you start looking at the transport of live animals. There's a very different thing that's on the books than what exists, or at least should exist, to separate yourself from hauling regular cargo. You have a little bit of an update on that this time around, right?
Yeah, I was really fortunate. I was at a meeting yesterday. Dr. Craig Gifford and Dr. Marcy Ward, two of our livestock specialists here in New Mexico, have actually written a publication that really tried to break this down and take it, you know, piece by piece to explain it well. And so I was able to get a lot clearer understanding of what this thing is really about. The ELD deal, unless you are driving a tractor, trailer, and hauling livestock, that one's not going to be as big of issue to our local folks. The bigger issue is going to come down to, and this is where it's interesting, that these rules have been on the books for several years, but the enforcement wasn't backing it. Now the feds have come in, as this ELD deal kind of opened the can, the feds have handed it down to the states and say, you can enforce this as you see fit. And I've heard some horror stories of situations, but where I'm rambling around to, anybody running a rig of a pickup and trailer that grosses over 10,000 pounds, which is basically anything over a half-ton truck and trailer,
sure. Yeah.
Is going to have a CDL. So every farmer out there that's got a one-ton truck and a 30-foot gooseneck to haul calves to Clovis technically should have a CDL to do that. Along with that, they're supposed to have a DOT number for that rig as a non-commercial hire rig. And so this is where the real rub's going to be. The other thing that plays into this is interstate commerce. So if you're taking a load of cattle across the state line, then it becomes interstate commerce, and then it comes in under the tax division. So it opens a can of worms, and I've heard some horror stories of folks trying to transport stuff. I heard of a pot the other day that got held at the port of entry because of that commerce deal. I've heard that Texas is really getting froggy on this and really cracking down. So I just encourage you as producers, ask questions, learn more about it, because this thing, depending on how it gets enforced, could really come back and bite some folks.
Sounds like a real setback in trying to make things easier on people.
Yes, so, sir.
All right. That is our 5 minutes with Roosevelt County agent Patrick Kircher. You can always get a hold of Patrick at the Fine Crew at the Extension Office, 356-4417. Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you.
This is the KSEL Field and Farm Report. As we do on Friday mornings, we have our weekly segment with Roosevelt County agent Patrick Kircher. Good day, sir.
Hello, sir.
We like to get together and talk about agricultural issues of the day. This time around, it's kind of one we haven't actually touched on in a little while. It's probably overdue for us to do so again. And that is, and I realize a lot of people are going to say, wait a minute, you're talking about California once again. That is correct. But we're talking about something completely different this time around. GMO, genetically modified organism, we've made the point on this show, that's a terrible name for it. It doesn't market well. It scares a lot of people just based on its name.
Yep.
But the fact of the matter is that most things that are out there are GMO products these days. But California's got a little bit of an itch, and they want to scratch it.
Well, where the deal plays in, a lady sued Dannon Foods because their yogurt said it was all natural. Her claim is that the cows that produced the milk that made the yogurt ate GMO crops. And so, hence, the yogurt produced from them could not be all natural because the cows ate GMO food.
So the merits of this case, or the lack thereof, whichever the case may be, it really just seems like this is a yet another layer to add on to that. Now you don't have to worry about something, whether it's GMO or not. There's actually her lawsuit is claiming they basically want to trace back to find out if there are other GMOs that were involved in the process of making that product.
Exactly. Yeah. No. And the thing that was interesting, and you don't, I shouldn't say you shouldn't often see this, but it is refreshing to see the court actually threw this out and they sided with Dannon on the deal because the lady brought no scientific information. She didn't defend anything. It was just her personal feeling. I mean, everything is about feelings today. You know, sure. It's all how we feel, how it affects me. And her feeling was that it can't be all natural because the cows ate GMO crops.
Yeah.
You know, and so, but it does open that can of worms. And we've talked about this before on here. The all natural deal, that's a pretty wide, loose kind of claim. I mean, that thing, you know, it's one of those buzzwords that makes people feel good, but there's not a real tight definition on where that natural thing goes.
Yeah, it's not up there with things that are acceptable terms, such as organic. That one's been defined by the Department of Agriculture. You know what organic is, you know what organic is not. All natural is always going to be a problem because that's not an acceptable term, at least in discussions of food.
Well, until you put parameters on that it has to be X, Y, Z, and everybody agrees that those are the parameters where you can define it. You know, it's just one of those loose terms. But like I say, in the bigger picture of it, it was nice to see the courts actually, you know, side with sensibility and pitch this frivolous lawsuit out.
You bet. Some other things we have going on. This one, what we can gather, the information that got released through NRCS, through the USDA, is that we can pretty much throw out the window. They're not going to open up more CRP lands for that particular program. But the Conservation Stewardship Program, that one's a big one that's been churning along here for a couple of years now, but so much so that now some of these contracts are getting ready to expire. A few options are laid out there for producers, though.
Yeah, and I'm not as knowledgeable on those, but it definitely seems like if you're wanting to look at a government program, and the upside of those programs are that they're actually doing things to improve the land. I mean, it encourages stewardship. It encourages conservation practices. You know, whereas the CRP program, in the grander scheme, it's just a big chunk of grass that sits there idle that they don't let you do much with for blocks of time. You know, where these are have got practices built into the system to, you know, help and encourage and promote. So, like I say, if folks are interested in using those government programs, it would certainly be something to look at if you could use it to benefit your program.
Now, we'd had something, we only got about a minute, we'd had something on our segment last week where we're talking about, do you need to have a CDL if you're an agricultural producer? Basically, the answer to that is yes, but the more information that comes out on this, the more confusing and convoluted it kind of gets. Got a press release this week from NMSU on that if you're a 4-H kid or something along those lines, that's not your business. The rules are a little bit different.
Yeah, and it's, I've tried to understand this thing, and it's just a huge ball of worms, and I don't know where you try to start picking them out. The basics of it are the rules have been on the books for a while. Apparently, there hasn't been any real push to enforce them here in New Mexico. In trying to read New Mexico statute, ag has a lot of leeway in rules on governing transportation, vehicle size, CDLs, all that kind of thing. The big nuts and bolts of it, you know, 4-H kid dragging their pig to the fair, they're not going to have to worry about having a CDL on their rig. Like I say, but I still don't have a great answer, and I can't of clean conscience try to advise producers on where this is at. So just continue listening. We'll continue trying to understand more on it and see if we can't get some tangible answers.
Or it might confuse you just a little bit more.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah.
That's the time for our segment this week with Roosevelt County Agent Patrick Kircher. You can always get hold of Patrick and the fine crew at the Extension Office at 356-4417. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.